right. So the clock has struck 10:05. So we'll go ahead and get started. First off, my name is Jeff Davis with the California After School Network. I'm the program coordinator with the network. And I want to welcome you to the free telephone policy update. First off, I just want to alert you to a few logistics with utilizing the telephone workshop. And in order to do that, if you find yourself in a noisy office, or if you're in an environment that has youth around, what you can do to mute your line is press *6. And what that will do is make sure that we don't hear any of the sounds that are coming through your phone so that everybody can hear clearly the information that's being presented. However, if you needed to ask a question, we still wouldn't be able to hear you. So in order to unmute your line, you would press *6. So just remember to mute or unmute your line, press *6. Please don't put the call on hold, because if you have any beeps, sounds, or music or anything like that that happens when you put your line on hold, we will all have the pleasure of hearing that information. Before I introduce the head of the California After School Network Policy Committee, Brian Lee, I'd just like to point out that AfterSchoolNetwork.org, the network website, has a number of resources and information that you can utilize and access regarding after-school policy. And that can be found at AfterSchoolNetwork.org/policy. And the types of information that you can find is sort of up-to-date information on what's happening with after-school policy, legislation, budget, etc., but also data on state and federally funded after-school programs by region, county, school district, and even drill down to the school level. Find out how what levels of funding are being received in each of those specified data sets, and the potential of students that they may serve. You can also do this by political district. And as you may have noted in the recent network newsletter, since the recent turnover, now is a great time to contact your legislatures and inform them of the positive benefits of after-school programs. We've had a turnover of 38 seats in the California legislature, both Senate and Assembly. 29 of those individuals filling those seats are brand new legislators with their first term in office. So it's a really great time to let them know how important programs are to the youth, to their families, to their communities. And we encourage you to invite them to a site visit. And at that website, afterschoolnetwork.org/policy, you can download for free the Network Advocacy Toolkit, which is a step-by-step sort of guidebook to invite those folks out to a site. There is no better experience that a legislature could have to support after-school programs than seeing what is happening at your site. Finally, I want to invite you to the opportunity to join this Network Policy Committee to receive regular updates on what's happening with policy, as well as learn about these calls well in advance. You can do all that at afterschoolnetwork.org/policy. Well, thank you for joining us today. At this point in time, I will turn it over to the head of our Network Policy Committee, Brian Lee.
Great. Thanks, Jeff. So I will try to deal with this. Here's an organized way that we'll address during this call. First, we'll talk about the state budget. Then we'll talk about legislative issues, then administrative issues, and then a federal update, which I think we're likely to get Jennifer Reinhart from the After School Alliance nationally to be able to step in there. And others are, of course, welcome to fill in on any of these. And I'm happy to take questions along the way, because otherwise I'll feel like I'm talking to myself. So on the state budget, which Governor Brown introduced a new budget in January, when we think about after school, there's two areas we want to be looking at. One is Prop 49 itself, and secondly is on child care, because a lot of school-age kids are getting after school programming through child care, and also there's an interrelationship between the child care system and the ACEs Prop 49 system to some extent. On this after school Prop 49 generally, as of now, the news is very good. Obviously, this is a horrible budget situation in California, and drastic cuts are on the table, and if the tax package that the governor's pushing doesn't make it to the ballot, or makes it to the ballot and loses, the cuts could be even much more drastic. Every year they always say there's nothing left to cut. This year, you know, feels that people are a lot more willing to accept some cuts to their program. So this is going to be a tough year. But on Prop 29, which it would take an initiative to undo the $550 million, while we've seen some proposals in the past, and we had a governor, Schwarzenegger, who of course was not going to be proposing to put his own initiative back on the ballot, we weren't quite sure with Jerry Brown. We did know that support for after-school programs was part of his education platform, but we didn't really know how far he was going to go. And basically, his proposed budget did not touch Prop 49, would leave funding alone. And I think that's consistent with a broader thing that he's trying to do in his budget, which is no cuts to the K-12 system, arguing that they've taken a disproportionate amount of cuts over the years already, and ACES is part of, you know, the K-12 system. Of course, that if the tax package does not advance, then that will open the door to K-12 cuts, and that could open the door to people talking about Prop 49 as well. So while the governor is not saying anything about Prop 49, and that's very good for supporters of Prop 49, it's still the possibility of an initiative, you know, it still exists, and one should always be concerned. Number one, the Legislative Analyst Office, it sits in the Budget Committee with the administration and the Department of Education at every hearing, continually says let's put Prop 49 back on the ballot, and this year is no exception. Even though they haven't been as aggressively pushing it. But they do mention it in hearings, and we even had a legislature asking the people on the panel, well, why shouldn't we put this back on the ballot? We are very fortunate that the California Department of Education is now run by Tom Torlakson, who's been a huge leader in after-school programs from the beginning of the ACES program, what was called the Adelson program, as one of the original authors. And also his staffer, who's been doing all of the talking to the committees, Aaron Gable, staffed a lot of these after-school issues for him in the legislature, and they've been very, very powerful in saying the superintendent supports this program, it would be a mistake to put it back on the ballot, it would lose anyways, or wouldn't even help you deal with this budget. So that's been very helpful. But, you know, the only thing out there, the suggestion is out there, is not something that they're raising a high profile of. Also, the Republican Party, in their analysis of the budget, seemed to have a little aside that said, well, we're thinking of putting some things on the budget, on initiatives, what about Prop 49? We haven't heard in committee hearings anybody say anything like that. It is important also to note that in the governor's budget, while he did not touch Prop 49, he does propose putting Prop 10, which is the first five commissions, back on the ballot, and basically siphoning off half of that funding from local and state commissions, the general fund, and also talks about a one-time grab of Prop 63 mental health funds without going back to the ballot. So it's not unheard of, the idea of going after some of these initiatives. They're not sacrosanct. But still, generally some kind of good news in after school. Moreover, in a way, because of some of the cuts to child care we'll get to in a moment, people are viewing the ACES Prop 49 program as a cushion against those, so it would make it even harder for people to say, let's get rid of Prop 49 if they're saying, well, we're cutting child care because Prop 49 is there. So that is another thing that is you know, helpful for 49, even though cuts to child care are bad for kids. So that's just sort of after school and Prop 49. Before I get to child care, and there's been a lot of action and hearings on that. Does anybody have any questions just generally about Prop 49 in the budget?
No.
Okay, I'll take that as no. So moving on to child care in the budget. The governor has some very sweeping proposals as to child care. There's some good news and a lot of bad news for people who are, you know, very supportive of the child care system. The good news is that he proposes restoring Stage 3 CalWORKs. Now, this has gotten a lot of press because Governor Schwarzenegger vetoed this last year, about $250 million. And this is funding for people who left welfare to work for their child care about 2 years later, after they've left welfare to work. And what's been critical here from the school-age population is because the kids are a little older, it's tilted towards school-age kids. And about 30,000 of the 55,000 kids in this program are school-age kids. Some of them might be in informal after-school programs, might be in informal settings. But there are a lot of school-age kids impacted. He does propose restoring that funding. And the legislature has been trying to kind of make do with some local funding and some state funding in the meantime, so there hasn't been a cut in services to this population. On the other hand, in a budget where there's a lot of cuts, he's proposed $750 million worth of cuts to the child care system, and that, I'm not quite sure, 25-30% of the child care system. It's a very, very significant cut. And some of those cuts include reducing reimbursement rates by 35%, which a lot of people say that if these programs are underpaid already, and if you cut it by that much, a lot of programs will fold. And also cutting eligibility levels from 75% of the state median income to 60% of the state median income, which would just narrow how many people are eligible for these programs. In addition, he's proposing, and a special note for ACEs and school age, to eliminate child care, which is currently 0 to 12, just make it 0 to 10. Eliminate care for 11 and 12-year-olds. A few years ago, they eliminated care for 13-year-olds. And at the same time, proposing priority for those displaced 11 and 12-year-olds into ACEs programs. So it does have some relationship to ACEs, with the idea that ACEs hopefully can pick up the slack to some extent of these programs, even though these kids have year-round needs, and often ACEs programs don't have a full year and before school open to them, and they may not be geographically where all of these students are. I'm going to get into some of the other proposals that have been surfacing and just a general take on the child care budget status and where that might be going. But first, any questions about the governor's proposals on child care? None at all. Okay. There have been other proposals that have surfaced, again, which have a bearing on after-school programs. The legislative analyst, again, has been out there, and one of the things they're proposing as an alternative to get to $750 million cuts is shifting more school-age children from the child care system to ACEs and 21st century programs if possible. It talks about lowering the age to 9, lowering the age all the way to 6, of how far they're going to be cutting back on school-age child care. And they're also talking about some pretty significant savings if this happens, so I have to think the legislature will look at it seriously, as much as $300 million in savings. What is of note there is that they also recognize that a lot of these kids are getting served in non-traditional hours, evenings, weekends, that ACEs and 21st century programs may not be able to, are unlikely to be able to address. So they recognize that even if there was a shift of a lot of kids from school-age child care, because school-age child care would still remain for a large number of kids, and there's a big debate about what percentage that might be. Originally, they thought 40% of kids were in non-traditional hours, and then they thought it was less, and then some legislators thought it was more. So that is just something to keep an eye on, that proposal. And when you think about that proposal, what impact would it have on ACEs programs is a real question. And sort of like think of it in three ways. For one, if there's a program available for some of these nearby some of these kids, they might go into that program. There might be empty slots. So they'll just fill in empty slots. And a lot of people think that since middle school has a lot of trouble often reaching their attendance levels because those kids, is just you can't get them 5 days a week. They vote with their feet, things like that. That for the 11 and 12-year-olds, that it might be more possible to absorb some of those cuts and have some of those kids get into ACEs or 21st century programs. because there's empty slots. They wouldn't displace any kids. They'd just kind of fill in the slots. Even though I think we know that a lot of the kids, the ACES program just would not be good enough for them. But for a percentage of them, maybe they'd fill a slot. So one's filling the slot. Another might be, if you have a full program, even with a waiting list, then because there's priority, you might be displacing kids currently in ACEs with kids from currently from childcare. And then you would not have a net gain in the number of kids being served. And that might be more likely to happen at the elementary school level, or, you know, I think waiting lists can happen across the spectrum in programs. So that's a second possibility, that you'd actually displace some ACEs kids. A third possibility that no one has expressly said but always gives cause for concern is that you could displace grants. They could kind of say, well, let's make some of these grants go to places where we know there were a lot of child care kids, or even go to child care, you know, the child care center. They should get an ACEs grant. And since there's really no money, or next no money available, most of the $550 million are out the door, there's concern, well, maybe they would try to displace existing grants. Now, again, I have not seen anyone explicitly say that. I don't think that it's expected that that would happen, but it's always a concern. Another proposal, in addition to LAO, is some of the people in the child care community have been gathering, trying to come up with alternative proposals to the governor. And what they'd originally talked about, saying, well, for the 11 and 12-year-olds, shouldn't we kind of look and see if there's some extra ACEs dollars and figure out a way to get some of those dollars to the child care centers that serve these 11 and 12-year-olds? And there was some concern that that just raised the specter of making it sound like there were a lot of ACEs dollars out there when they really aren't. There's been a lot of discussion and collaboration with the child care community, and they've withdrawn for now formally putting that proposal out there. In addition, there has been some talk about consolidation. Given that there's going to be some need for trying to move, if the governor gets his way, at least 11 and 12-year-olds, some of them in the ACEs programs, the concern was these are run in different divisions of the Department of Education. Maybe there should be some consolidation so people keep better track of school-age kids and make sure they're in the right place. And I suspect that people in the child care community thinking of that think that the child development division where child care is would be the best place, even though child care only serves about 100,000 school-age kids. The after-school program serve over 400,000 kids, so there would be a case made that she moves elsewhere. Again, that seems unrelated to a budget issue, and again, that's been withdrawn for the time being as well. But those are issues that are out there. Related to both of those kinds of proposals is there's been a little bit of talk of, well, would we make any changes to the ACEs program to accommodate cuts to school-age child care, be it 11 or 12-year-olds or beyond that? And would those need to go to initiative? And there's been some talk of things about, you know, trying to make ACEs funding more available during the summer, there might be different ways of doing that, or making it more income eligible, like the child care system. I mean, I think there would be a resistance to having anything go by initiative back to the voters from the after-school folks. And once you put any idea out there, let's tinker with it by initiative, then by the time it gets to the floor, that might be, well, if we're going to do an initiative, let's just go after the whole top 49. So that always gives some cause for concern. Finally, just in terms of the forecast, of with all these ideas out there, Where do we think it's going to land? And we aren't quite sure. It does seem like that there's some of these arguments, some of the cuts really, the child care community made a very strong case about how especially the 35% rate decrease would be a terrible thing and would really force a lot of programs out of business. But the question is, well, where do you come up with the money then? And it does seem like there is some talk about cutting slots across the board, maybe not even cutting 11 and 12-year-olds, just saying we're going to have fewer slots at the same reimbursement rates and the same eligibility levels. So that is something that is possible. But I do think, even though in the hearings you didn't hear a whole lot of traction for expanding the 11 and 12-year-olds lower, because there's potential dollar savings there that are significant, that it's very possible the legislature will be looking at that. So we want to keep an eye on that. At the hearings, of note for after school, is that some of the most impactful testimony, emotional testimony, was about 11 and 12-year-olds and how dangerous it was to leave them alone and unsupervised. There was also a bit of talk about how a lot of preschool centers are preschool by morning and school-age by afternoon and really need both funding for both to continue, for that center to continue. So a lot of issues related to child care. I think over the next week or two, we will see the proposals that the legislature comes up with emerge under the governor's timeline to really try to rush this. I think that it will go to full committee hearings, and we'll see some real proposals next week to get a better sense of this. So we will be keeping an eye on child care as well as on after school. So any questions about the child care proposals and just all the activity around that, or even going back to Prop 49 and being absent from being protected in the state budget so far? Any questions? Okay.
Brian, I just had one question. On the child development, when you said they served 100,000 kids, is it after-school kids or 11- and 12-year-olds?
No, they serve, my estimate is 105,000 school-age kids,
okay.
5 to 12. The estimate is that it's about 14,000 11- and 12-year-olds.
Okay.
Total, when you across all the school ages, a little over 100,000. Any other questions about the child care? Okay, I'll move on then to legislative. Now, the legislative bill deadline isn't until the end of this month, so we're still waiting to see what there's going to be. I've only heard of a few things so far. Number one, some advocates have been working with Senator DeSaunier, who's had a long-term interest in summer programming, talking about potentially having a bill that for ACEs and 21st century summer dollars, giving flexibility to programs, instead of right now, you can get $7.50 per day, presumably for just a 3-hour program for like the course of the summer, giving the flexibility to like double that, get $15 per day and have a longer program, but for a shorter amount of time, consistent with a lot of research that says to do a really good program, you need to have it be a longer program. And a lot of that deals with the reality of when some of the supplemental funding passed, you were summer program, summer schools, and this was actually just an add-on to the summer school, so they only needed a 3-hour add-on like for the school day. So there has been some talk about adding some flexibility, giving places that already have summer grants in 21st century or ACEs, giving them the chance to have a less period of time, but more hours a day. So that's one possibility. I've also heard that there may be a bill that addresses the background checks issue of last year, where there was some clarification last year of how many, when and how often people ought to be subjected to fingerprints. And there was some concern that a bill may have been introduced that seemed to undo last year's compromise, and I haven't heard more, but clearly there are advocates who were involved in that are on top of that, and that just may have been an inadvertent thing, because there didn't seem to be any controversy at the time over how it was done, how they figured things out last year. So it's just something to keep an eye on. And I think there is a bill number, but I don't have that in front of me, and we'll be able to track it down. So we'll keep people posted on that, and we will hope, as the bills are introduced, we'll put things online on the policy committee website, which is network.org/policy, I believe, and which would list all the bills and any updates on the budget as well. So any questions, or anybody know of any other legislative proposals that are out there?
No.
Does anybody have any reaction to that summer proposal about the flexibility?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'll move on then to the administrative issues. And, you know, as we know, Department of Education, as I mentioned, is under new leadership with Tom Torlakson, and there's been very longstanding on these issues. And also of interest to after-school advocates, Jennifer Peck, who was formerly the Bay Area Partnership, but now the Partnership for Children and Youth, I believe is the head of the transition team. She's had a longstanding relationship with Jennifer Peck. She's I don't think moving to the Department of Education permanently staying as a partnership, but it's very active in the transition, and that's very good news for making a lot of trying to keep the after-school issues as a high priority for the superintendent, because obviously there's a whole lot that he is dealing with. There were four issues that I wanted to highlight where there's been some activity. Number one is the voluntary reduction issue, an involuntary reduction issue, which, as people recall, they kind of put off some reductions last year, but are intending to do another round of voluntary reductions during the course of this year, which would apply to next year's grants, and would open up dollars for this last round of ACEs. And there was some question of, well, how are you going to measure what your attendance is, which would, because if your attendance is not meeting its goals, that would impact how much you are reduced. And there's a lot of discussion from the department in the field, and in the department kind of created, I think, four different options, really trying to find the best that works for you. And I believe it was year 2009 to 2010, or just the school year, or the calendar year 2009, or calendar year 2010. Any way you want to measure it for your best attendance, they were going to give you that option. So we'll see how that process moves forward. Secondly is the weekends issue, which Senator Torlakson had actually twice authored bills that got vetoed by the previous governor about allowing after-school programs, ACEs dollars, to be used on weekends. Our understanding is that the department is looking to see if they can accomplish that administratively. And obviously it's something that Superintendent Torlakson does care about a lot, and they are actively looking at that, and that issue did come up in some of the topic hearings as well. Third is a categorical program monitoring auditor question, which is, as some of the auditing was happening, there was people believe, a misunderstanding of current law about which kids you can count for attendance. Current law says that the intent is that middle school kids show up 3 days a week and elementary school show up 5 days a week. And the question is, what's the meaning of intent? And apparently the auditors were often saying, if they don't show up 5 days a week, you can't count their attendance at all. And that is not what people understood things to be. Apparently, from the Department of Education, it appears that they strongly believe that it's just intent language and you should be able to count any kids who show up. Apparently, the Department of Finance, which is under the governor's office, has a different point of view and thinks that it's mandatory. But the Department of Education, I guess it's out of both of their hands, and I guess it's an auditor or controller decision. And the Department of Education seems fairly confident that would be decided in the favor of count all the kids. Doesn't matter if they make it 5 days a week or 3 days a week. I'm not exactly sure where that is in the process, but the last I heard from them, they were confident that would be resolved more favorably. The last issue that came up, that seems to be coming up a bit, is about school substitutions and new schools and what the process is. If they don't have the right code yet, if they don't have free and reduced school lunch numbers yet because they're a new school and they haven't calculated it, how can they apply for grants or get grants for schools that close for them? And I think it was a little messy in the last RFA process. People have appealed if they were denied because they thought that they were deserving of a grant and would have had a high school lunch percentage based on their schools that they were serving that population from. And that issue, it seems the department is still trying to work out, but is actively working with the regional leads on that. And I was also in contact with the regional lead, who was saying that there's been really productive work between the department and the regional leads of late, where really the department's been consulting with them and then sharing drafts with them after that consultation, and that sounds like a very positive step. And finally, administratively, as folks know, there was an RFA for ACEs that was due in January, and I think within a few months people expect that to come out for the next calendar year. And then for 21st Century, there's an expectation that in November of 2011, an RFA will go out for 2012-13 year grants for 21st Century. So there's some possibilities of dollars there. Any questions on administrative issues? Okay, let me move then to federal issues. And Jen, are you on the call? in my heart with that school alliance?
Sorry, I was on mute. I'm here.
Okay, you want to give us an update?
Sure. So I'll try and keep this brief because I feel like you guys have gotten a lot of information in the little bit of time that I've been on the call so far. So on the federal side, kind of in keeping with Brian's separation into a couple of different categories, I'll just start with appropriations first since that's kind of first on the agenda for Congress here. So I think folks know that at the federal level, we've been operating on a continuing resolution since October of last year, since Congress did not wrap up the fiscal year 11 budget work that they should have done by the beginning of October. So we're on a continuing resolution that takes us through to March 4th at this point. So Congress's activity so far has been sort of related to last year's budget and trying to get that finished. The House is moving forward with their proposals, and you've probably seen some news coverage around this where they are proposing some pretty widespread cuts across all kinds of federal government spending, including the largest ever cut to discretionary spending in the budget. So I think similarly to what you're seeing in California, there's, you know, likelihood of cuts, but at this point nothing related to after school specifically is being kind of singled out. There are a number of places that have been highlighted as possible cuts, but they haven't gotten to the detail of, say, 21st century or child care development block grants. It's bigger kind of categories that they're talking about now. Some of the proposals that we've seen from the Republican Study Commission talk about for fiscal year 11 going back to fiscal year 08 spending levels, and we have a chart on the policy news section of our website that tells you exactly what that would mean for each of the states. So for California, that would be, if that sort of sticks with their overall thinking, this return to fiscal year 08 levels, that would be a cut of about $9 million for California for 21st century. So this is kind of this isn't definite in terms of where they're headed at this stage. It's just kind of some messaging that's been thrown out there in terms of cuts that may take place. Similarly, so assuming they would move forward with something like that for fiscal year 11, which is our current budget year, then they're talking about kind of another layer of cuts then for fiscal year 12, which is really the budget they should be working on at this point. And there they're talking about returning to FY06 levels, and that would be about another $11 million cut just for California specifically. So if this one version of kind of cuts moves forward over a two-year fiscal year time period, it would be a cut of $20 million for California, which equates to about 20,000 kids on average from 2023 services. So obviously we're concerned, but we don't have a lot of specifics at this point. Again, the chart kind of detailing what those cuts would mean is available on the policy news section of our website, and we'll continue to keep people posted as this moves forward. The timetable right now is that the House is supposed to vote next week on their version of the fiscal year 11 budget, and then they'll have about 2 weeks to work things out with the Senate before this current continuing resolution expires. So by March 4th, we should know what's happening in terms of the current budget year, and then they'll begin working on fiscal year 12. Next Monday, so Monday, February 14th, the president is announcing his fiscal year 12 budget proposal. And I'm sure many of you heard in the State of the Union, President Obama talked about a five-year spending freeze. So we don't expect to see, increases, obviously, but we haven't heard specifically, you know, that after school, either in the form of CCDBG or in 21st century, is being singled out for cuts. I think it's probably likely that we'll see a similar proposal to what the Obama administration put forth last year in their budget proposal related to 21st century, where they tried to do some consolidation with some other initiatives and also kind of opening things up to lengthening the school day and the allowable uses of 21st century. But that's all just kind of guessing at this point. And then finally, just on the status of the Elementary and Secondary Education Act, which has been up for reauthorization since 2007, Again, you may have heard a couple of different folks, whether it's Obama or Secretary Duncan, talk about they think that this is the one bill that the Congress can come together around and really pass a new Elementary and Secondary Education Act this Congress. The Senate seems to want to move forward with kind of a full-scale bill, like the whole comprehensive ESEA in one package. The House has talked about potentially doing kind of piecemeal bills, so one section at a time kind of approach. So there's conversation happening on both sides in both committees. We are working with Senator Boxer and Senator Ensign. Senator Boxer, by the way, is now the new co-chair of the Senate After School Caucus. Senator Dodd was formerly the co-chair of the caucus. And now that he's left the Congress, Senator Boxer took over that position officially as chair of the caucus, which is great news, and her office has been really active in working with us over the course of this year so far. We are, in fact, organizing a briefing with them this coming Friday where we'll be highlighting some of the good work that's happening in after school. We have a law enforcement official who's going to be at the briefing, and middle school principal and a local community-based organization provider that will be there, too. Unfortunately, none of those folks are actually from California, but they're all more from the D.C. kind of metro area. But Boxer's office has been really active in pulling together the briefing, so you should know, which you know already, that she continues to be a great champion of after school. But we're working, the other thing separate from the briefing is we're working with Senator Boxer and Senator Ensign on a standalone bill for 21st century that hopefully could be incorporated into any larger bill for the Elementary and Secondary Education Act. And so we've been looking at the language that the omnibus spending bill from last year that never actually got passed, but the language is out there. And looking at different language that Miller and others had looked at last year when sort of looking at making the changes to 21st century that would allow for expanded learning time, and trying to come up with kind of a new generation of 21st century that everyone can embrace that would allow for some of the changes that people are looking for but doesn't go quite as far as we were worried that the administration on their own would go. So I think that's really quickly kind of what's happening at the federal level, but I'm happy to answer any questions if that wasn't clear.
And Jen, this is Brian. One question I have about 21st century, I seem to recall that it sounded like administratively at some point there was talk that the Department of Education was going to go ahead and do some of its, on its own, do some stuff about expanded learning time.
That is the one other item that's still out there. The Department of Education 21st Century representatives from each of the states have been invited to D.C. on April 7th and 8th, I think it is, for a meeting to talk about revisions to the non-regulatory guidance for 21st Century and also the state plans that states are asked to submit related to 21st Century. States haven't actually been asked to submit a state plan since 2002 when NCLB was first passed. And when that happened, 21st century was just a tiny part of a larger comprehensive plan. The department has indicated to the state education agency reps that they want a 21st century specific state plan, and they're sort of connecting that to this newly revised non-regulatory guidance. So everyone's expectation is that the department is trying to figure out a way to, the U.S. department is trying to figure out a way to work within existing legislation and allow for a longer school day or year as part of that existing legislation rather than wait for any reauthorization of ESEA. So we're trying to, of course, work from within the U.S. department to find out what's going on and also keep in touch with all the state education agencies to see what they're hearing from the federal government as well, and working with a couple of congressional offices to voice concern that, you know, they've been working at the congressional level to sort of work out the issues around the longer school day as part of 21st century and encourage the department not to kind of step in there and muddy the waters and take us back to where we started this whole discussion more than a year ago. So, yes, that is very much still a conversation that's going on at this point.
Any other questions for Jim? Okay, well, thank you for that update. And one thing I forgot to mention related to Prop 49 was that the Legislative Analyst's Office did release a report within the last week about categorical flexibility. And, you know, a few years ago they passed that a lot of these categorical programs, districts would have discretion to spend the dollars any way they want instead of specifically what they applied for years before. ACES was exempt from that because the initiative made it that they can only do that by initiative. But they did do, this is the second of these reports, and they did a survey of districts asking, what do you want more flexibility over? And there was a pretty significant increase across the board in people wanting more flexibility over programs that were exempt, including for ACES, where last year it was about 51% wanted a lot of flexibility, and this year like 71% wanted a lot of flexibility. So you know, just helpful to know that information is out there. After bills are introduced, we'll probably plan another call for late March, early April, because it'll be helpful to have a chance to digest those bills, and they may be of interest to folks. But if people have any questions about anything that's been raised before, or any comments that they wanted to introduce, any policies that they thought were growing at the state level that we should be aware of. Okay. Well, we thank you all for your time and participating in this, and it's also, if you only caught part of it, I believe they'll put a tape of this online, so folks have a chance, for your colleagues who might want to hear the update, and please feel free to contact me by email, BLEE@calfightcrime.org, or 415-762-8274 if you have any questions about any of these things as time goes on. So thanks again. I'll give everyone a last chance to add anything. Okay. Yeah, that's it. Well, thank you
very
much.
Hey, Brian. This is Jeff Davis from the California After School Network. I just wanted to say thank you for your update and encourage folks to remain involved by joining the committee at afterschoolnetwork.org/policy. Thank you very much, Brian, and thanks to all. This will be recorded and posted online. Have a great morning.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Jeff. Thank you, everybody. Have a great day.
Thanks.